Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 9th of May, recording at 8:53 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I'll just do a quick review of the week. This week, we saw stock markets begin to give up some of those quite good moves on the upside that we had seen over the preceding 3 weeks or more. We also saw bonds, government bond prices, I should say, check their downward trends. They had fallen really quite sharply as equity markets were rallying. And so, as so often the case, and the bond futures seem to be taking their cue from stock market activity, and they have shown some downtrend checking upward dynamics this week and are in technical rally mode. Now, the US dollar, which had been ranging higher, has faltered a bit in here late in the week. And some of the metals, well, the metals have been mixed. We've seen platinum surge ahead. That's potentially important for the precious sector because it has been a lead indicator for such a long time. And of course, that coincided with a period during which the gold price, the corrective phase, in other words, came back to that $850 level just below it. It came back to the upper side of a area of potential support, as mentioned previously. But so these precious metals have steadied up, but the sharp gain has come from platinum. And the industrial metals, though, have been softer generally. And we, for instance, are seeing both nickel and zinc tested. They had been underperforming for a while in ranging patterns. They're still in ranging patterns, but they are currently retesting the lower side of those ranging patterns. And platinum having broken to, I beg your pardon, copper having broken to a new all-time high, could not maintain that move and has backed off those highs once again. In the foods and the agricultural commodities, it's been fairly mixed action overall. The strongest of the commodity, or the steadiest, I should say, right now is corn, and that's been the case for a while. Where the other contracts had seen those accelerating peaks, they've been subject to some fairly choppy action overall. Corn has been, I mentioned, has been steadiest recently, and we've seen soybeans firm up a bit as well. And in the livestock contracts, that's quite interesting. They had been big underperformers, but have shown some firming, some real firming here in the last few days. But the big story on the week, unquestionably, has been the oil sector. And we've seen this going from strength to strength. Crude oil's rise has been unrelenting, and currently trading, the West Texas Intermediate is currently trading at 126.07. That's a new all-time high, or the high has actually been 126.25 today. And natural gas has put on another 300 points in here to 11.57. And so energy really has been the story. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, stock markets, as I said, having had that quite reasonable rally, most stock markets, from at least the April reaction lows during the first half of April, Stock markets have faltered in those rallies, and I think energy prices are certainly a factor that has that have spooked investors somewhat. And this is, I mentioned yesterday, actually it was the day before yesterday, I mentioned that it looked as if stock markets may have entered a reactive phase. We'd seen some downward dynamics starting in the Asian region, led by the Hang Seng, the H-share index, also the China, mainland China, indices that looked like they had checked rallies. Europe held steadier and still has, arguably, but the U.S. market capitulated a bit yesterday, and it's weaker in here again today, although not massively so, and least so in the technology sector. Among the indices, I'm saying that the Nasdaq 100 has not come back very much. But overall, we have seen this loss of upward momentum as the oil prices have rallied. Now, this is probably a reaction consolidation move overall. But if that is the case, we will need to see this pullback encounter support above those first half of April reaction lows. I mentioned that a couple of days ago. And those levels on the charts are important because they've established the uptrends. In other words, you had the January lows, then we had the March lows, which were a retest of the January lows, and then stock markets rallied, then we had the April reaction lows. They moved higher from that point, establishing the 2-point uptrends if you connect the March lows and the April reaction lows. And a number of indices pushed up above their February rally highs, which is a positive technical development, but they've now faltered, and some of those are still hovering around those February rally highs or dipping back towards them or beneath them. And it will still, every all this action, this pullback will still look like a consolidation, as I say, provided it does not take out those April reaction lows. Were a number of markets to do that, that would just suggest that we were going to get bogged down into at least a further ranging period. And we need to watch the financials during this period, and they've been pretty much lagging all along. At least in the U.S., that's been the case. You can see those U.S. bank indices, for instance. They have continued to lag. So in terms of leadership, it's been the transports that have really dominated on the upside, but they've run into some resistance near their all-time highs. Technology has been a good solid performer, but is hesitating currently. And the S&P and the Dow had nudged above their February highs, but are struggling to hold that, and the financial indices continue to underperform. Now, my feeling on this is that we're still in a recovery phase. I think this is still what I call the psychological perception phase number one. Of a recovering market where we get a lot of ranging activity, and in that type of environment, coming off lows, that investors will see what they want to see. Those who are long or putting money in the market will pick out the rising lows. Those who are bearish, because they've got large cash holdings, or they may well and are hoping to buy lower. When they may well be short, in which case they're certainly hoping to cover at lower levels, will point to the fact that rallies are relatively short-lived, that they fail to maintain upward breaks, and the overall activity, as I say, is of course dominated by plenty of ranging activity. In such an environment, if the lows are rising, however gradually, if the lows are rising, then we have a demand-dominated environment, even if it's only 51 to 49 in terms of weightings. And I think that's the environment. I think most indices suggest that that's the environment that we are in, a demand-dominated environment, but only marginally so overall. There are large cash pools held by many investors, which I think will underpin downside risk. And while the perception of risk is quite high, I think that it's relatively low in equities overall in terms of the risk of another big sell-off, I think is relatively low. Where the risk is higher is that if one gets the timing wrong, it can be expensive. If one chases a rally, that's more risky because rallies tend to be short-lived, as I mentioned before, in this environment, and indices or various markets shares struggle to maintain upward breaks in this environment. On the other hand, if one buys on the corrections, then one tends to do a bit better. But the key point to focus on is, are the lows rising, the reaction lows rising overall? If that's the case, then demand has the upper hand and we can expect a further recovery. On the other hand, if we're seeing lower highs and lower lows, and not that many indices show that type of pattern, and then we're in a more dangerous environment overall, and there would be a greater risk of new lows being reached. We're not in that environment right now, but we can't take anything for granted. So I expect to see, but I will also be relieved to see most of these indices find support above their April reaction lows. Now, in terms of the fundamental background to this environment, veteran subscribers will almost certainly recall, and in fact, you go back a number of years when so many analysts were saying that we were going to get a major deflationary problem. Some were even saying shortly after the 2001-2002 recession, long after the 2001-2002 recession, they were still saying that there was a risk of a major deflation, and some even saying a lengthy deflationary recession or even a deflationary depression. Well, I never bought into that view, and watching the central bank activity, remember we were getting the Bernanke helicopter speeches talking about the amazing machine, the printing press, and why deflation won't happen here. These are headline and items and titles to articles that he was writing at the time, and I posted most of those, and they can still be found in the archives. But my view was very much that central banks had sown the seeds of the next major inflationary cycle, and that was more or less inevitable because we had seen a long disinflationary period. That was the one that was introduced in the 1980s by Paul Volcker. And that cycle was extended by globalization and China as being an exceptionally competitive assembler first, and then just general producer of goods, was helping to keep down the costs of goods. Competition was helping to keep down wages. So that disinflationary period was extended despite the fact, due to globalization, as I say, despite the fact that central banks were printing and printing and printing. And that really all began aggressively in the late 1970s. We had the Asian financial crisis, we had the Russian debt default, we had the long-term capital mismanagement bust, We had various other events. I won't be able to remember them all, but I've listed them many times, and they'll be familiar to you. We had the Y2K panic. Then we had 9/11. We had the tech bubble before that. We had the recession, and so on, and the central banks just kept printing and printing and printing and pumping and pumping and pumping. Against that background, what I continually described, you go back and listen to those old audios saying that they had already sown the seeds of the next inflationary cycle, but it would emerge very gradually, and it would emerge when it became evident. It would also look like many charts. We would get these rolling waves, in other words, but with inflationary pressures gradually picking up. And I think today, now you can almost anything you pick up and read, you will hear about the inflation problems caused largely by the resources inflation, and that was another Fuller Money theme. Supply and elasticity meets rising demand. That resources, first industrial sources, and then we saw that reflected in precious metals, and then eventually food price inflation would emerge, and we would be in a long-term inflationary cycle, and that's where we are today. We now see the tangible evidence in the inflation data. You've seen it, mind you, in your household bills for a number of years, but it is much more emotive today because we see it in energy prices, and we see it in food prices, and the food prices are particularly emotive, even more so than the energy prices. This obviously creates dilemmas for central banks. They will handle it differently. Where debt levels are high and growth is relatively weak, as in the United States, central banks, or the Fed in this instance, will be very reluctant to squeeze. They'll take the risks on inflation rather than see the economy slump into a recession or into a deeper, longer recession than might otherwise occur. Where debt levels are lower, savings rates higher, and growth reasonably steady overall, central banks will be emboldened to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of inflation. And I think we've seen that by the ECB recently, their reluctance to cut. And I think we've also seen that in the tightening that has occurred in some of the Asian countries, China, for instance. But the big picture theme here is that we're no longer in any kind of Goldilocks environment. You know, that's that sort of coy term for not being too hot, not being too cold, just sort of just right economic environment. We're no longer in that type of environment, and I've said on a number of occasions recently, we're not going to be returning to baby steps anytime soon. In other words, we may not return to that for a number of years. Now, is this a grim environment that we're now in? Well, no. It's a tougher environment than what we saw from that 2003 through 2006 period. It's an environment where I think we will see more volatility overall. It is an environment that historically has been a headwind for stock markets. It's been an environment historically where investors have, well, first I would say where equities have proved vastly more attractive than bonds, and equities have been able to maintain some earnings momentum in previous inflationary environments. However, investors have been reluctant to pay as much for those earnings. In other words, than we've seen in other cycles. In other words, we tend to see generally somewhat lower valuations in the inflationary periods. Investors want higher yields to offset the inflation, and they won't pay quite so much for earnings overall. Companies that have real pricing power to keep ahead of inflation tend to do very, very well indeed. And we've seen that with the commodity-related, resources-related shares in the last few years. And I think that that's likely to continue, although inevitably there will be a degree of volatility there. Now, I mentioned the bearishness of bonds, and this is something that I've been saying for a long time, and that we, just as we move into a long cycle of erratically rising inflationary pressures, that while equities will be more volatile, while valuations will tend to be a bit lower than in a more than they would be in a disinflationary environment, the inflationary environment is fairly grim in terms of bond market performance. And we see when we look at the charts of long-dated government bond yields, for instance, you can see the base formation development there overall. If you look at the long-term charts of and look at the long-term monthly charts of futures prices, and you see the big topping activity showing up. Now, my feeling is that while equities will be certainly among the most interesting long side investments in this environment, despite the additional volatility that we have seen, and I think we will continue to see, that bond markets will offer some absolutely outstanding shorting opportunities. Now, timing is always important in all markets, so and anybody who is shorting the long-dated government bonds would be doing that on the basis of futures, and those are leveraged trades, so again, timing becomes extremely important. And the rallies that we get in bond futures will more often than not be triggered by sell-offs or reactions, reaction being a well, downward moves in stock markets will tend to be reflected. We'll see the inverse of them rather in bond markets, with bond future prices rising, bond yields coming down. That's what we're seeing right now. So while my hunch is that we will see this correction in stock markets carry on a little bit further, hopefully finding support, as I've already mentioned, above those early April reaction lows. As stock markets begin to steady once again, we will probably have, I suspect we'll have a good shorting opportunity in these long-dated government bonds. Now, you know, I've shorted these from on a couple of occasions this year, and the U.S. Treasuries and also the JGBs with some success. My last run in this was in the JGBs, and they had quite a sharp fall, an accelerating fall. I'm out of that position now, as you may recall, and they're rallying up. We're getting some short covering. I'd be delighted to see that carry the contracts a little bit higher. And then as soon as I saw that begin to falter, or as soon as I do see that begin to falter, I intend to open some short positions once again. And this, I think, will be a tactic that I will be using really for quite some time. When people are a bit frightened of equities, they'll go into these bond markets, lifting bond futures prices and creating the short selling opportunities. What about other inflation playing markets? Well, there's the precious metals. They will remain in a long-term secular bull market overall. I've been saying now, ever since we had those accelerated peaks led by platinum, that we were seeing a medium-term correction, and I've also been saying that this was not a particularly favorable time of the year for precious metals. The favorable time of the year is in the fourth quarter of the year and in the first quarter of the new year, because you get all those factors, the buying ahead of Christmas, the buying ahead of the Chinese New Year, and the buying ahead of the Indian wedding season. Well, those are all in the background now, and we're more likely to be seeing occasional news of selling by European central banks, and I think we may get a round of selling. Well, we definitely will get a round of selling from the IMF at some point. But having seen the price of gold push up over 1,000 during its acceleration, not being able to hold it, and come down to 850 as we saw, that, in my view, is most of the move that we're likely to see on the downside. I'm reluctant to say at this stage, I don't see the technical evidence to say firmly that that's definitely the extent of the downward move, but I am impressed to see the strength of platinum here right now. So my view overall is that we may have a dull gold market, but we probably don't have a very risky gold market. Anybody who's holding gold bullion funds, for instance, I think that your downside risk in the short to medium term is not that much, maybe 800, and possibly a little bit of temporary overshoot beyond that, but I think that would be very, very brief if it occurred. And there is a possibility that that was it at 850, that we've already seen the low, and the upside will be not only a retest of that high up above 1,000, but a good deal more, I think, by the time we get well into the fourth quarter of this year and the first quarter of 2009. So I think that those who are looking at precious metal markets and the investors are probably mainly interested in gold, that gold can now be described as a buy on dips. I'll probably watch and wait for a while longer here due to the seasonal factors, but I tend to play it primarily through the futures, as you know. So I'd like to have the seasonal factors on my side, but there is a risk that I may miss an opportunity to buy closer to the bottom. And I would say there's at least a 40% chance that we have seen the lows in these precious metals. Okay, what else to mention? What about the other commodities generally? Well, crude oil, if you look at the long-term charts, and I posted those, I think it was last Thursday that I did that. I'm not quite sure on that, but I did a review of the energy sector, and it's becoming overextended, but it's still consistent. There is a possibility that we will get some upside acceleration if we do get upside acceleration. Now, we think of a gradually steepening trend, but if you look at the daily chart, and we've posted that a lot, and it is one that I would be watching very closely, if you look at that, it's a persistent advance, but it's of the staircase step variety where we get a trading range, and with the trading range that's forming finding support above the top of the previous range, and then we get the upside breakout, and any subsequent reactions find support above the top of the earlier trading range, so on. So with a staircase step type of appearance on the chart, but normally, as these moves wind up, as they mature, and this is a fairly crowded trade here right now, a lot of people have long and leveraged positions in this sector. The time during which those steps form tends to shrink a bit, so the whole thing speeds up a bit, and we get the angle of the trend steepening. Now, that shows up particularly on the weekly charts, and it shows up against all currencies. This is still a consistent move, which means that it isn't over. Still has momentum. There's no reason yet for people to panic out of their long positions in these trades. If we get acceleration, which some of the stronger moves do see, as I say, that would certainly weigh on stock market sentiment beyond what we have already seen. As a matter of fact, in terms of bearish news for equity indices generally, the rising oil price or rising prices for all energy, that's that, all of the energy contracts, I should say, that is the main worry right now in stock markets. I feel that's becoming quite a strong headwind overall. So watch this though. When we do see this surge upwards in the energy prices, when we do see that spill over into a corrective phase, I think that that may well coincide with a rally, the next rally in the broader stock market indices. And what about the currencies overall? I mentioned that the dollar had faltered a bit in here. But it's too soon to say that we've seen the end of this short covering rally, which inevitably has generated some long demand. I'm not a big bull here of the dollar by any means, as you know, although we did point out the overextended condition as it got down to historic lows last month, and pointed out that was it April or was it the end of March? That it was overextended on the downside, and that we would get some ranging, and there was scope for some short covering. Well, we've seen a fair amount of that short covering. It's too soon to say that we've seen all of that short covering dollar rally that we're likely to get, but my hunch is we've seen a fair portion of it overall, and I find it very difficult to turn long-term bull of the US dollar in here at this stage. One, because US interest rates are going to stay low for a long time, and so we will have negative interest rates for the US dollar against virtually everything else except the Japanese yen. And also, we know how much money printing is still taking place in the US, and that will be an ongoing negative factor overall. But the currency markets overall are fairly quiet right now. And so I think they're a neutral influence on stock markets overall. The big influence at the moment, particularly in the last week, is the oil price, and that's a negative. And I think that's pretty much it. So I'll say that's a wrap for another week, and I'll just wish you a very, very good weekend. I hope you're enjoying the same level of wonderful weather that we're seeing in London right now. If anything, it's a little bit too warm, but it would be kind of nice if this weather persisted through next week, when, of course, I know a number of you are coming to London for Owen's two-day chart seminar. And I will also make a showing for the drinks reception period on the Friday following that seminar, and look forward to seeing you. Meanwhile, all the very best.